Good afternoon. I'm Mark Allen with Gaper.io. Good afternoon. I'm Mark Allen with Gaper.io, and I'm here today with Bjorn Freeman Benson, the Senior Vice President of Engineering at Ambassador Labs. Good afternoon, Bjorn. How you doing?
It's a beautiful day. You know, I'm in the Pacific Northwest, so a beautiful day means it's raining, but it's still a beautiful day.
It's a beautiful day down here in the Bay Area, too. It is sunny out, though, today in the low 70s, so it's pretty nice out here. So to start with, can you share a brief background of yourself and your work experience?
Yeah, so I'm currently running engineering here at Ambassador Labs. And prior to that, I ran engineering for Envision, which is a design tools company. And the nice thing about Envision is it's a fully distributed company, which, of course, we all are now in the COVID times. We went to fully distributed, but Envision was the first place that I worked in a fully distributed company. And prior to Envision, I ran engineering for New Relic, back from when it was a teeny company up through past the IPO and so on. And that was a non-distributed company. So I did engineering for a non-distributed company and then engineering for a distributed company. And so I tried various aspects of that. And prior to that, I worked at the Eclipse Foundation doing open source software, which of course is a distributed thing. And then, prior to that, you keep going back in my history and I've done hardware, I've done software, I've done big software, I've done small software, just done a wide variety of interesting things that I could go on and on about. But, that's the most recent things that I've done.
Yeah, you and I could probably go back
two decades or so, right?
We can go back always. I mean, my first job involved punch cards. I don't know if yours did.
Yes.
Yes. So in that same age group, some of the people listening to this are going like, what are punch cards?
Yeah.
So tell us about Ambassador Labs. What is your base product? Who's your typical customer? And how do you help them?
Yeah. So we build tools for people who work with Kubernetes. Kubernetes is a complicated product. It's very powerful, but it's complicated. And so, if you're developing in a cloud native space on top of Kubernetes, there's a number of things that you typically want to have to solve that or to help you with that. And so we build a number of tools. We have Ambassador, which is built on top of the CNCF emissary project, which we've built. We have Telepresence, same thing. It's a CNCF project that we have a paid version of as well. And Telepresence is kind of cool. It allows you to basically make your laptop be a pod in your Kubernetes cluster so that then you can use your IDE to debug the code that's running in the cluster. And so we call it Telepresence because it sort of teleports you into the cluster. Really cool technology. And once you've used it, you're like, God, I don't know how I've ever managed to build a working Kubernetes microservices cluster without it. But, things like that. So basically it's for people who are working with services in a Kubernetes cluster, and they've got various challenges with that. And we have a set of tools that help you with that particular process.
And that's what I've heard. I personally have never used Kubernetes, but I have heard that it's a great tool, but you need manpower or people power behind it, right? So I assume you help. That's your ROI. They need less people to
exactly right. So the idea is that you need fewer people or less expertise because we're automating a lot of that for you. And I could go on and on about that, but we're not here to talk about specifically the Kubernetes tools, which I would love to talk about and all those interesting things. If you wanted to talk about those things, we should do another podcast.
Yeah, we'll do another one. Cool. So you said you're distributed now. You're in Portland, I know. Is your development staff all in Portland, or are they basically all over the country or all over the world?
Yeah, they're all over the world, mostly in North and South America, because one of the things that I've discovered having done this distributed work for a number of companies now is that time zones really do matter. Mm-hmm. And so I focused on building this particular company up in similar time zones. So it's mostly North and South America. We have some people in Europe. We don't really go much farther. I guess that's east than, I think we've got some people in Stockholm, and we don't go much farther east than that because that's, pushing the time zones. And we don't really go any farther west than the west coast of the United States. At Envision, I had people who were farther west than that, and the time zones just didn't work out very well. If you're working in Hawaii, it's a nice place to live, but the problem is you have to get up really, really early to work with anybody else. So basically we're trying to do a vertical time zone segment of the world.
Yeah, and a lot of South America does, like intersect the US, although like the far East Coast is, I think, still another hour.
It's way over there. Yeah.
It's still another hour or two past our East Coast, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's Uruguay and that far. And in the West Coast of South America, I think, lines up with our central or our mountain time.
Yeah, it's central time. So, you know, it works out pretty well. Most of our development staff, I would say, is centered around the East Coast time zone, just because that's where we found people, you know, vertically up and down. We don't have any particular preference for that. It's just that's where we happen to have found a bunch of people. And, you know, at the size company we are, you hire a lot of people that you know from your networks. So if I hired you, then, you know a bunch of people. And so we would end up with a bunch of people out of the Bay Area, right? Because you just know a bunch of people out of the Bay Area. So, you know, some of our early engineers were out on the East Coast in Montreal and New York City and Boston and so on, and Stockholm. And so we've ended up with more engineers in those places, right? As we continue to grow, of course, that will spread out over more time zones, but that's where we are basically.
And was Ambassador Labs always a distributed employee company, or was it, you know, everyone came into an office and then COVID hit? How did that actually happen?
Well, it was sort of halfway between those. Originally, it was everybody in an office when it was founded. I wasn't one of the founders. It was everybody in office, and they had an office there in Boston. And then when the CEO convinced me to join, I looked around and I said, you know, we're having a hard time hiring people in Boston because there's a lot of interesting software in Boston. So, you know, you could go do something else. And so I said, well, I've just come from Envision, where we did this fully distributed thing. So why don't we do that here as well and start hiring people who are not just in Boston? And so we had already started moving to a distributed sense when COVID hit. And then we closed down the Boston office, which by then was more sales and marketing and less engineering in the Boston office. And then we just distributed everybody. And we actually got rid of that lease. And so we don't even have any offices now because we, you know, COVID. We may go back to having, you know, small offices in certain cities where there are larger concentrations of people. We did that at Envision. We typically had offices, you know, WeWorks or, you know, something like that, in cities where people had small apartments. Because, you know, like I live in Portland and I have a big house. And so I've got a separate office here that I'm sitting in. But if you live in, say, San Francisco and you have a small little apartment and it's you and the family in the apartment, they're pretty sick of you by now. You want to get out and go to someplace else to go to an office. And so at Envision, we had a number of little pods, you know, little WeWorks or something, where if you lived in one of those cities, you could just go there and work there so you could get out of your apartment. And so we may go back to that sort of thing here at Ambassador Labs. You know, depending on what people want, really depends on what the employees are interested in.
Yes, and I do know, I do have some friends in San Francisco who, there has been tension, we'll say, at home.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and especially you have kids at home too that are.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right, it's just, there's first of all, there's so much bandwidth and you can only, you know, you have to sometimes just go somewhere and be quiet, and it's hard to find if you've got two or three kids and two spouses that are working, right?
Well, you know, one of the things that I've found is works well for me, but again, you know, I have a large space, is that I have a separate computer for work and a separate computer for home, right? And so my family knows that when I'm at this computer, I'm at work, and when I'm at the other computer, I'm not at work, right? So if you have a small enough space and you have just the one computer, you know, people have a hard time knowing, like, are you at work? Are you not at work? If you're at work, I shouldn't bother you. But if you're not at work, you know, then I can ask you to do the dishes or whatever it is. So, you know, there's a lot of social tensions around there. And so that's why we might, you know, supply WeWorks like spaces.
Right? Yeah, no, it makes sense. And I've noticed more and more WeWorks. There's one popped up in my town the other day that it wasn't there 6 months ago. So maybe what they should do, if they don't have two separate computers, maybe they should, hat on means I'm working, hat off means I'm
right?
Something like that. Something easy to see.
So if that works, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, two-year-olds don't tend to notice those things.
Exactly, so, right.
you're thinking of opening up or reopening offices, but it sounds like you're still not 100% sure. Is that something you're still working through with management?
No, I am management. So it's really based on the desire of the employees, not something that we need as a company, right? So, you know, to me, offering a space for people to get out of their houses to go, or their apartments to go someplace else, is a benefit that we offer, just like we offer healthcare and we offer vacations and, you know, that sort of thing. And so it's one of the things that you think about when you think, gosh, we're a fully distributed company. What are the benefits we can offer people that make us an attractive employer? We offer interesting work. We offer the chance to get out of the house. We offer, right. And so as more people are comfortable getting out of their apartments, and they start asking for that sort of thing, we'll say, yes, let's do that. So for example, one of our engineers in New York City has had a WeWork space. Well, it's not WeWorks, but it's, you know, one of those like places during the entire pandemic, because his apartment is so small that he just couldn't work in it. And so he said, well, I need one of those spaces. So he has a little, you know, one of those little offices. And so he just goes there every day. I suspect it's like two blocks away from his apartment. So it's not like a big commute, right? But, you know, he needed that. And it's one of the benefits we could offer him. So we said, sure, let's do that, right? So when you hear uncertainty in my voice, it's because nobody has come to me yet and said, we want to do that. But when they do, you know, we'll do that, because I understand why you would want to do that sort of thing. Now, from my perspective, one of the things that I want to do is I would like to get back into an office on an intermittent basis, 2 days a week, you know, something like that, because I miss talking to people. You know, I've been on Zoom now for many, many years. For a while, it was because I was working at a remote or a distributed company. And now it's because it's COVID and I'm working at a distributed company. But, you know, I'm tired of not seeing people. But, you know, I don't necessarily want to go in every day, because the commute did take a lot of my time, and I enjoy the ability to do other things. You know, instead of walking down to the coffee shop, I can go downstairs and make myself a sandwich. Right. So there are certain advantages to working out of my house, but there are disadvantages in that I find that whiteboarding is so much harder. So, you know, if I want to do that kind of work, I would prefer to be in the same space as other people. So, you know, I look forward to the time when we can get back to that. And, you know, even if we didn't have, say, in Portland, a place where we rented an office, because not enough of us in Portland wanted that, we might still have a place where we could rent a conference room for a few hours. Right. And I could call up, you know, Bruce, and I could say, Bruce, meet me down at the conference room. I got this idea. I want to whiteboard with you. Run through it all, you know, because it's just so much. I find it so much more effective in person with a marker in my hand than it is trying to do it, even with all the great tools that we have, you know, and high bandwidth, right?
Not quite the same, right? And I wouldn't be surprised to see if your local Starbucks or Pete's or whatever start, you know, offering whiteboards as a service or something like
that. Yeah, that would be an interesting idea, yeah.
Right, hey, maybe we should patent this and start a business. So going forward, it sounds like you're gonna just really see what the employees want, which is actually a novel way to do it, I think. And I think I agree with you. I think people will want to get together, but not from 9 to 5 every day.
Right. So one of the things that I did and envision is that we get the engineers together regularly. So my goal was that every engineer had the opportunity to get together with other engineers twice a year. So rather than having one big meeting, we just got groups of engineers and we look at where a city that's sort of equidistant between all of them were, and we'd all fly them there for a week and then they would work there for a week. And we would just do this regularly with different groups of engineers so that everybody got a chance to socialize with other engineers. And it wasn't that they were actually even working on the same project. It's that they had a chance to meet and collaborate and bounce ideas and learn from other people so that they could get better at their job, that they could get the social connections that would make them more effective at their job and so on. So, you know, that's another way you can do these things, right? At the moment, you know, people aren't traveling that much, or maybe they are, but, you know, we sort of haven't. And so maybe that's what we would do instead of having little pieces of office space, you know, but it really depends on what the right mixture of how to make an effective workspace for people. And that sort of goes back to one of my management philosophies, which is if you're going to hire these great, smart people to work at your company, which if you're not doing that, why are you not doing that? But let's say you are, right? If you're doing that, you should actually set them up to be successful. like, and in every possible way. So like, what are the ways that I can make you successful? And then like, I will set that up. So one of the things that I had back at New Relic was, you know, I said, one of the things that engineers hate doing is going to meetings, especially useless management meetings.
Yes.
So for many years, one of my rules was no engineer had to go to more than 2 meetings a week.
Ooh.
Now, you know, I classify meetings like if you and I get together to talk on a whiteboard about some design thing, I don't classify that as a meeting. That's us working, right?
Yeah.
A meeting is something that some manager calls and tells you to go listen to a presentation or something. Like, and so it was no more than 2 a week. And it really was great because the engineers love that. They get a lot done, you know, and so on. And eventually the company got big enough that that kind of fell apart. And then, you know, we stopped being as effective, right? Yeah. So, you know, that's part of my philosophy of how do I make the engineers as effective as possible? Because those are the people who are building the things that we're selling to the customer. So it should all be tailored towards the engineers, not towards what me is more convenient as a manager. So like this thing I had at New Relic of no more than 2 meetings a week meant that the managers had a lot more meetings because A, they had to take the meetings that otherwise the engineers would have taken. And B, they had to have a lot more meetings with engineers so that the engineers didn't have to go to a lot of meetings, right?
Yes.
You see how the math works, right?
I do.
Well, so it meant that the manager's job was more meaningful, but that's because their job was to make the engineers effective, right? So I just take that same philosophy here at Ambassador Labs, which is how can I make the engineers as effective as possible? And whatever the right thing is to make that happen, I'm going to make that happen.
Very cool. And right? Speaking as a fellow engineer, I would certainly appreciate that. And the other thing, as a manager, it forces you to really know what your engineers are doing, as opposed to the weekly status meeting where everyone talks for 3 minutes and nobody really listens anyway.
Nobody listens. It's totally ineffective. You're not getting any value out of that. You're just wasting everybody's time.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have a different philosophy about that, which is I say, this is the goal. And really the goals that we describe to the engineers are not ticket-based. Like I'm also not a ticket-based engineering management structure, because I think that just turns you into a ticket machine.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't pay you all this money to be a ticket machine. I'm paying you all this money to be a creative individual. Mm-hmm. And so I tell you what the business goal. The business goal is new users should be able to become effective in 2 minutes or less. It's like, okay, so how are you going to make that happen? And then I'm going to come back in 2 weeks and you're going to show me how that happens. I'm not going to tell you what tickets to implement. I'm not going to, you know, not going to make all the stories into little Jira things. Like, if you want to do that, that's fine. You can organize your own work however you want. I personally make lists of things. So, you know, because I'm an engineer, I'm into lists, but I'm not making lists for other people. I'm just giving them a business goal. And then, you know, it's up to them to execute that, right?
I've noticed good engineers, if given a proper goal, they'll figure it out.
Yeah, exactly.
They are creative.
and it's more fun.
It is.
You know, it's just way more fun than being told, you know, okay, now you're going to go implement the dialogue box that, you know, asks how many files the person should open. Like, you know, right. I mean, you might have to do that, but it's no fun to be told that.
Right. And I also think what you really need are really good engineers with really good UI UX people. And then you have a really good combination.
Because exactly.
As you know, UI UX is a separate discipline and a separate skill altogether. And I personally, if they asked me to design stuff, they'd be all green screens.
Yeah. So, you know, when I build something, I'm the same way. When I build something, you know, it's old fashioned HTML with square boxes and forms and, you know, and all that. It just is ugly as anything. Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just the prototype. And then the design people take it and they go, well, you know, we can make that better. We can make the experience better. We can make it look better. We can make it the flow better. I'm like, great.
Make it so my mother can work with it.
Right. Exactly.
That's the test. So, well, we'll be over to, it's always good to talk to a fellow old timer. I'm going to call you an old timer. We're both old timers. You started in punch cards. You're an old timer.
Started in punch cards. You bet.
And I think we've both been through enough of the battles and the wars to know that let the people do their job. If you let them do their job, they'll do it.
That's my management philosophy. And it's served me very well through multiple companies, all sorts of success. And so I continue to do that because I loved it when I was an engineer, and I just want everybody who works in the company that I work in to have the same great experience.
Well, if I'm ever out of work, I might give you a call.
There you go.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for your time today. It's been great talking to you, and have a great week.
Thanks.